The Frog Prince by Jacob and Wilhelm Grimm. In olden times, when wishing still helped one, there lived a king whose daughters were all beautiful. But the youngest was so beautiful that the sun itself, which has seen so much, was astonished whenever it shone in her face. Close by the king's castle lay a great dark forest, and under an old lime tree in the forest was a well. And when the day was very warm, the king's child went out into the forest and sat down by the side of the cool fountain. And when she was bored, she took a golden ball and threw it high and caught it, and this ball was her favorite plaything. Now it so happened that on one occasion the princess's golden ball did not fall into the little hand which she was holding up for it, but onto the ground beyond, and rolled straight into the water. The king's daughter followed it with her eyes, and it vanished, and the well was deep, so deep that the bottom could not be seen. At this she began to cry, and cried louder and louder, and could not be comforted. And as she thus lamented, someone said to her, "What ails you, king's daughter? You weep so that even a stone would show pity." She looked round to the side from whence the voice came, and saw a frog stretching forth its big, ugly head from the water. "Ah, hold, water splasher, it is you," she said. "I am weeping for my golden ball, which has fallen into the well."
"Be quiet, and do not weep," answered the frog. "I can help you, but what will you give me if I bring you your plaything up again?"
"Whatever you will have, dear frog," said she. "My clothes, my pearls and jewels, and even the golden crown which I am wearing."
The frog answered, "I do not care for your clothes, your pearls and jewels, nor your golden crown. But if you will love me and let me be your companion and playfellow, and sit by you at your little table and eat off your little golden plate and drink out of your little cup and sleep in your little bed, if you will promise me this, then I will go down below and bring you your golden ball up again."
"Oh, yes," said she, "I promise you all you wish, if you will but bring me back my ball once again." But she thought, "How this silly frog does talk. All he does is sit in the water with the other frogs and croak. He can be no companion to any human being." But the frog, when he had received his promise, put his head into the water and sank down, and in a short while came swimming up again with the ball in his mouth, and threw it onto the grass. The king's daughter was delighted to see her pretty plaything once more, and picked it up and ran away with it.
"Wait, wait," said the frog. "Take me with you. I can't run as you can."
But what did it avail him to scream his croak after her as loudly as he could? She did not listen to it, but ran home and soon forgot the poor frog, who was forced to go back into his well again. The next day, when she had seated herself at the table with the king and all the courtiers, and was eating from her little golden plate, something came creeping splish splash up the marble staircase, and when it had gotten to the top, it knocked at the door and cried,
"Princess, youngest princess, open the door for me."
She ran to see who it was outside, but when she opened the door, there sat the frog in front of it. Then she slammed the door in great haste and sat down to dinner again, and was quite frightened. The king saw plainly that her heart was beating violently, and he said, "My child, what are you so afraid of? Is there perchance a giant outside who wants to carry you away?" "Ah, no," replied she. "It is no giant, but a disgusting frog."
"What does a frog want with you?"
"Ah, dear father, yesterday I was in the forest sitting by the well, playing. My golden ball fell into the water, and because I cried so, the frog brought it out again for me. And because he so insisted, I promised him he should be my companion, but I never thought he would be able to come out of his water, and now he is outside there, and he wants to come into me."
In the meantime, it knocked a second time and cried, "Princess, youngest princess, open the door for me. Do you not know what you said to me yesterday by the cool waters of the well? Princess, youngest princess, open the door for me."
Then said the king, "That which you have promised, must you perform. Go and let him in." She went and opened the door, and the frog hopped in and followed her step by step to her chair. There he sat and cried, "Lift me up beside you." She delayed until at last the king commanded her to do it. Once the frog was on the chair, he wanted to be on the table. And when he was on the table, he said, "Now push your little golden plate nearer to me so that we may eat together."
She did this, but it was easy to see that she did not do it willingly. The frog enjoyed what he ate, but almost every mouthful she took choked her. At length, he said, "I have eaten, and I am satisfied. Now I am tired. Carry me into your little room, and make your little silken bed ready, and we will both lie down and go to sleep." The king's daughter began to cry, for she was afraid of the cold frog which she did not like to touch, and which now was to sleep in her pretty clean little bed. But the king grew angry and said, "He who helped you when you were in trouble ought not afterwards to be despised by you." So she took hold of the frog with two fingers, carried him upstairs, and put him in the corner. But when she was in bed, he crept to her and said, "I am tired, and I want to sleep as well as you. Lift me up, or I will tell your father." At this she was terribly angry, and took him up and threw him with all her might against the wall. "Now, will you be quiet, you odious frog?" said she. But when he fell down, he was no frog, but a king's son with the kind and beautiful eyes. He, by her father's will, was now her dear companion and husband. Then he told her how he had been bewitched by a wicked witch, and how no one could have delivered him from the well but herself, and that tomorrow they would go together to his kingdom. Then they went to sleep, and the next morning when the sun woke them, a carriage came driving up with 8 white horses, which had white ostrich feathers on their heads, and were harnessed with golden chains, and behind them stood the king's servant, Faithful Henry. Faithful Henry had been so unhappy when his master was changed into a frog that he had caused 3 iron bands to be laid round his heart, lest it should burst with grief and sadness. The carriage was to conduct the young king into his kingdom. Faithful Henry carried them both in, and placed himself behind again, and was full of joy because of this deliverance. And when they had driven part of the way, the king's son heard a cracking behind him, as if something had broken. So he turned round and cried, "Henry, the carriage is breaking." "No, master, it is not the carriage. It is a band from my heart, which was put there in my great pain when you were a frog and imprisoned in the well." Again and once again they were on their way, something cracked, and each time the king's thought it was a carriage was breaking, but it was only the bands which were springing from the heart of Faithful Henry, because master was set free and happy. There once was a rich man whose wife lay sick, and when she felt her end drawing near, she called to her only daughter to come near her bed and said, "Dear child, be good and pious, and God will always take care of you, and I will look down upon you from heaven and will be with you." And then she closed her eyes and died. The maiden went every day to her mother's grave and wept, and was always pious and good. When the winter came, the snow covered the grave with a white covering, and when the sun came in the early spring and melted it away, the man took himself another wife. The new wife brought 2 daughters home with her, and they were beautiful and fair in appearance, but at heart were black and ugly. And then began the very evil times for the poor stepdaughter. "Is the stupid creature to sit in the same room with us?" said they. "Those who eat food must earn it, and she is nothing but a kitchen maid." Then they took away her pretty dresses, and put on her an old gray kirtle, and gave her wooden shoes to wear. "Just look at now, the proud princess, how is she decked out?" cried they, laughing. And then they sent her into the kitchen. There she was obliged to do heavy work from morning to night, to get up early in the morning, draw water, make the fires, cook and wash. Besides that, the sisters did their utmost to torment her, mocking her, and strewing peas and lentils among the ashes, and setting her to pick them up. In the evenings, when she was quite tired out with a hard day's work, she had no bed to lie on, but was obligated to rest on the hearth amongst the cinders. And because she always looked dusty and dirty, as if she had slept in the cinders, they named her Cinderella. It happened one day that the father went to the fair, and he asked his 2 stepdaughters what he should bring back for them. "Fine clothes," said one. "Pearls and jewels," said the other. "But what will you have, Cinderella?" said he. "The first twig, father, that strikes against your hat on the way home. That is what I should like you to bring me." So he brought for the 2 stepdaughters fine clothes, pearls, and jewels. And on his way back, as he rode through a green lane, a hazel twig struck against his hat. He broke it off and carried it home with him. And then, when he reached home, he gave to the stepdaughters what they had wished for, and to Cinderella he gave the hazel twig. She thanked him, and went on her mother's grave, and planted the twig there, weeping so bitterly that tears fell upon it and watered it, and it flourished and became a fine tree. Cinderella went to see it 3 times a day, and wept and prayed. and each time a white bird rose up from the tree, and if she uttered any wish, the bird brought her whatever she had wished for. Now it came to pass that the king ordered a festival that should last for 3 days, and to which all the beautiful young women of the county were bidden, so that the king's son might choose a bride from among them. When the two stepdaughters heard that they were too bidden to appear, they felt very pleased, and they called Cinderella and said, "Comb our hair, brush our shoes, and make our buckles fast, for we are going to the wedding feast at the king's castle." When she heard this, Cinderella could not help crying, for she too would have liked to go to the dance, and she begged her stepmother to allow her. "What? You, Cinderella?" said she, "and all your dust and dirt, you want to go to the festival. You have no dress and no shoes. You want to dance." But she persisted in asking, until at last the stepmother said, "I have strewed a dishful of lentils in the ashes, and if you can pick them all up again in 2 hours, you may go with us." Then the maiden went to the back door that led to the garden, and called out, "O gentle doves, O turtle doves, and all the birds that be, the lentils in the ashes lie, come pick them up for me. The good must be put in the dish, the bad you may eat if you wish." Then there came to the kitchen window 2 white doves, and after them some turtle doves, and at last a crowd of all the birds under heaven, chirping and fluttering, and they alighted amongst the ashes, and the doves nodded with their heads and began to peck, 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 and then the others began to peck, 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 and put all the good grains into the dish. Before the hour was over, they were all done, and they flew away. The maiden brought the dish to her stepmother, feeling joyful, and thinking that now she should go to the feast. But her stepmother said, "No, Cinderella, you have no proper clothes. You do not know how to dance, and you would be laughed at." And when Cinderella cried for disappointment, she added, "If you can pick 2 dishes full of lentils out of the ashes, nice and clean, you shall go with us," thinking to herself, "That is not possible." When she had strewed 2 dishes full of lentils among the ashes, the maiden went through the back door into the garden and cried, "O gentle doves, O turtle doves, and all the birds that be, the lentils in the ashes lie, come and pick up for me. The good must be put in the dish, the bad you may eat if you wish." So there came to the kitchen window 2 white doves, and then some turtle doves, and at last a crowd of all the other birds under heaven, chirping and fluttering, and they alighted amongst the ashes, and the doves nodded with their heads, and began to peck, 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 and then all the others began to peck, 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 and put all of the good grains into the dish. And before the half hour was over, it was done, and they flew away. Then the maiden took the dishes to her stepmother, feeling joyful, and thinking that now she would go with them to the feast. But she said, "All this is no good to you. You cannot come with us, for you have no proper clothes. You cannot dance. You would put us to shame." Then she turned her back on poor Cinderella, and made haste to set out with her 2 proud daughters. And, as there was no one left in the house, Cinderella went to her mother's grave under the hazel bush and cried, "Little tree, shake over me, that silver and gold may come down and cover me." Then the bird threw down a dress of gold and silver, and a pair of slippers embroidered with silk and silver. And in all haste she put on the dress and went to the festival. But her stepmother and sisters did not know her, and thought she must be a foreign princess, she looked so beautiful in her golden dress. Of Cinderella they never thought at all, and supposed that she was sitting at home picking the lentils out of the ashes. The king's son came in to meet her, and took her by the hand and danced with her, and he refused to stand with anyone else, so that he might not be obliged to let go her hand. And when anyone came to claim it, he answered, "She is my partner." When the evening came, she wanted to go home, but the prince said he would go with her to take care of her, for he wanted to see where the beautiful maiden lived. But she escaped him, and jumped up into the pigeon house. Then the prince waited until the father came, and told him of the strange maiden had jumped into the pigeon house. The father thought to himself, "It surely cannot be Cinderella," and called for axes and hatchets, and had the pigeon house cut down, but there was no one in it. When he entered the house, there sat Cinderella in her dirty clothes amongst the cinders, and a little oil lamp burnt dimly in the chimney. For Cinderella had been very quick, and had jumped out of the pigeon house again, and run to the hazel bush, and there she had taken off her beautiful dress, and laid it on the grave, and the bird had carried it away again. and then she put on her little gray kirtle again and sat down in the kitchen amongst the cinders. The next day, when the festival began anew, and the parents and stepsisters had gone to it, Cinderella went to the hazel bush and cried, little tree, shake over me, that silver and gold may come down and cover me. Then the bird cast down a more splendid dress than the day before, and when she appeared in it amongst the guests, everyone was astonished at her beauty. The prince had been waiting until she came, and he took her hand and danced with her all alone, and when anyone else came to invite her, he said, she is my partner. And when the evening came, she wanted to go home, and the prince followed her, for he wanted to see to what house she belonged. But she broke away from him and ran into the garden at the back of the house. There stood a fine large tree, bearing splendid pears. She leapt as lightly as a squirrel amongst the branches, and the prince did not know what had become of her. So he waited until the father came, and then he told him that the strange maiden had rushed from him, and that he thought she had gone up to the pear tree. The father thought to himself, surely cannot be Cinderella, and called for an axe and felled the tree. But there was no one in it. And when they went to the kitchen, there sat Cinderella among the cinders as usual, for she had got down the other side of the tree and had taken back her beautiful clothes to the bird in the hazel bush and put on her old gray kirtle again. On the third day, when the parents and the stepchildren had set off, Cinderella again went to her mother's grave and said to the tree, little tree, shake over me, that silver and gold may come down and cover me. Then the bird cast down a dress, the likes of which had never been seen for splendor and brilliancy, and slippers that were of gold. And when she appeared in this dress, at the feast, nobody knew what to say for wonderment. The prince danced with her alone, and if anyone else asked for her, she answered, she is my partner. And when it was evening, Cinderella wanted to go home, and the prince was about to go with her, when she ran past him so quickly that he could not follow her, but he had laid a plan, and had caused all the steps to be spread with pitch, so that she rushed down. The left shoe of the maiden remained, sticking in it. The prince picked it up, saw that it was of gold, very small and slender. The next morning he went to the father and told him that none should be his bride, save for the one whose foot the golden shoe should fit. The two sisters were very glad, because they had pretty feet. The eldest went to her room to try on the shoe, and her mother stood by. But she could not get her great toe into it, for the shoe was too small. Then her mother handed her a knife and said, cut the toe off, for when you are queen, you will never have to go on foot. So the girl cut her toe off, squeezed her foot into the shoe, concealed the pain, and went down to the prince. Then he took her with him on his horse as a bride and rode off. They had to pass by the grave, and there sat two pigeons on the hazel bush and cried, there they go, there they go. There is blood on her shoe. The shoe is too small. Not the right bride at all. Then the prince looked at her shoe and saw the blood flowing. He turned his horse round and took the false bride home again, saying she was not the right one, and that the other sister must try on the shoe. So she went into her room to do so and got her toes comfortably in, but her heel was too large. Then her mother handed her the knife, saying, cut off a piece of your heel. When you are queen, you will never have to go on foot. So the girl cut a piece of her heel and thrust her foot in the shoe, concealed the pain, and went down to the prince, who took his bride before him on his horse and rode off. When they passed by the hazel bush, the two pigeons sat there and cried, there they go, there they go. There is blood on her shoe. The shoe is too small. Not the rat bride at all. Then the prince looked at her foot and saw how the blood was flowing from the shoe, staining the white stocking, and he turned his horse round and brought the false bride home again. This is not the right one, said he. Do you have no other daughter? No, said the man. Only my dead wife left behind her a little stunted Cinderella. It is impossible that she can be the bride. But the king's son ordered her to be sent for. But the mother said, oh no, she is much too dirty. I could not let her be seen. But he would have her fetched, and so Cinderella would have to appear. First she washed her face and hands quite clean, and went in and curtsied to the prince, who held out the golden shoe. Then she sat down on a stool, drew her foot out of the heavy wooden shoe, and slipped it into the golden one, which fitted perfectly. When she stood up, the prince looked her in the face and knew again the beautiful maiden that had danced with him, and he cried, "This is the right bride." The stepmother and the two sisters were thunderstruck and grew pale with anger, but he put Cinderella before him on his horse and rode off. And as they passed a hazel bush, the two white pigeons cried, "There they go, there they go, no blood on her shoe. The shoe's not too small, the right bride is she, after all." When they had thus cried, and they came flying after, perched on Cinderella's shoulders, one on the right and the other on the left, and so remained. And when her wedding with the prince was appointed to be held, the false sisters came, hoping to curry favor, to take part in the festivities. So the bridal procession went to the church. The eldest walked on the right side and the younger on the left, and the pigeons picked out an eye of each of them. And as they returned, the elder was on the left side and the younger was on the right, and the pigeons picked out the other eye of each of them. And so they were condemned to go blind for the rest of their days because of their wickedness and falsehood. The end.
There once was a man and a woman who had long in vain wished for a child. At length the woman hoped that God was about to grant her desire. These people had a little window at the back of their house, from which a splendid garden could be seen, which was full of the most beautiful flowers and herbs. It was, however, surrounded by a high wall, and no one dared go into it, because it belonged to an enchantress who had great power and was dreaded by all the world. One day, the woman was standing by the window and looking down into the garden, when she saw a bed which was planted with the most beautiful rampion, Rapunzel, and it looked so fresh and green that she longed for it, and had the greatest desire to eat some. This desire increased every day, and she knew that she could not get any of it. She quite pined away. She began to look pale and miserable. Then her husband was alarmed and asked, "What ails you, dear wife?" "Ah," she replied, "if I can't eat some of the rampion, which is in the garden behind our house, I shall die." The man, who loved her, thought sooner than let your wife die, bring her some of the rampion herself, let it cost what it will. At twilight, he clambered down over the wall, into the garden of the enchantress, hastily clutched a handful of rampion, and took it to his wife. She at once made herself a salad of it, and ate it greedily. It tasted so good to her, so very good, that the next day she longed for it three times as much as before. If he was to have any rest, her husband must once more descend into the garden. In the gloom of evening, therefore, he let himself down again. But when he had clambered down the wall, he was terribly afraid, for he saw the enchantress standing before him. "How can you dare," she said with an angry look, "descend into my garden and steal my rampion like a thief? You shall suffer for it." "Ah," answered he, "let mercy take the place of justice. I only made up my mind to do it out of necessity. My wife saw your rampion from the window and felt such a longing for it that she would have died had she not got some to eat." Then the enchantress allowed her anger to be softened and said to him, "If the case be as you say, I will allow you to take away with you as much rampion as you will. Only I make one condition. You must give the child to me, which your wife will bring into this world. It shall be well treated, and I will care for it like a mother." The man in his terror consented to everything, and when the woman was brought to bed, the enchantress appeared at once, gave the child the name of Rapunzel, and took it away with her. Rapunzel grew into the most beautiful child under the sun. When she was 12 years old, the enchantress shut her into a tower, which lay in a forest, which had neither stairs nor door, but quite at the top was a little window. When the enchantress wanted to go in, she placed herself beneath it and cried, "Rapunzel, Rapunzel, let down your hair." Rapunzel had magnificent long hair, as fine as spun gold, and when she heard the voice of the enchantress, she unfastened her braided tresses, wound them round one of the hooks of the window above, and then her hair fell 20 ells down, and the enchantress climbed up it. After a year or two, it came to pass that the king's son rode through the forest, passed by the tower. Then he heard a song, which was so charming he stood still and listened. This was Rapunzel, who in her solitude passed her time by letting her sweet voice resound.
The king's son wanted to climb up to her and looked for the door of the tower, but none was found. He rode home, but the singing had so deeply touched his heart that every day he went out into the forest and listened to it. Once, when he was just standing behind a tree, he saw that an enchantress came there and heard how she cried, "Rapunzel, Rapunzel, let down your hair." Then Rapunzel let down the braids of her hair, and the enchantress climbed up to her. "If that is the ladder by which one mounts, I too will try my fortune," said he. And the next day, when it began to grow dark, he went to the tower and cried, "Rapunzel, Rapunzel, let down your hair." Immediately, the hair fell down, and the king's son climbed up. At first, Rapunzel was terribly frightened when a man, such as her eyes had never yet beheld, came to her. But the king's son began to talk to her quite like a friend, and told her that his heart had been so stirred that it had let him have no rest, and that he had been forced to see her. Then Rapunzel lost her fear. When asked her if she would take him for her husband, she saw that he was young and handsome. She thought, "He will love me more than the young Dame Gothel does." And she said yes, and laid her hand in his. She said, "I will willingly go away for you, but I do not know how to get down. Bring with you a skein of silk every time you come, and I will leave a ladder with it. And when it is ready, I will descend, and you will take me on your horse." They agreed that until the time he should come to her every evening, for the old woman came by day. The enchantress remarked nothing of this, until once Rapunzel said to her, "Tell me, Dame Gothel, how it happens that you are so much heavier for me than the young king's son? He is with me in a moment." "Ah, you wicked child," cried the enchantress. "What do I hear you say? I thought I had separated you from all the world, and yet you have deceived me." In her anger, she clutched Rapunzel's beautiful tresses, wrapped them twice around her left hand, seized a pair of scissors with the right, and snip-snap, they were cut off. The lovely braids lay on the ground. She was so pitiless that she took poor Rapunzel into a desert, where she had to live in great grief and misery. On the same day that she cast out Rapunzel, however, the enchantress fastened the braids of hair, which she had cut off, to the hook in the window, and when the king's son came and cried, "Rapunzel, Rapunzel, let down your hair," she let the hair down. The king's son ascended, but instead of finding his dearest Rapunzel, he found the enchantress, who gazed at him with wicked and venomous looks. "Ha ha," she cried mockingly, "you would fetch your dearest, but the beautiful bird sits no longer singing in the nest. The cat has got it, and will scratch out your eyes as well. Rapunzel is lost to you. You will never see her again." The king's son was beside himself with pain, and in his despair he leapt down from the tower. He escaped with his life, but the thorns into which he fell pierced his eyes. Then he wandered quite blind about the forest, ate nothing but roots and berries, and did naught but lament and weep over the loss of his dearest wife. Thus he roamed about misery for some years, and at length came to the desert where Rapunzel, with the twins to which she had given birth, a boy and a girl, lived in wretchedness. He heard a voice. It seemed so familiar that he went towards it. And when he approached, Rapunzel knew him and fell on his neck and wept. Two of her tears wetted his eyes, and they grew clear again, and then he could see with them as before. He led her to his kingdom, where he was joyfully received, and they lived a long time afterwards, happy and contented. Once upon a time, there was a dear little girl who was loved by everyone who looked at her, but most of all by her grandmother, and there was nothing she would not have given to the child. Once she gave her a little cap of red velvet, which suited her so well that she would never wear anything else, so she was always called Little Red Riding Hood. One day her mother said to her, "Come, Little Red Riding Hood, here is a piece of cake and a bottle of wine. Take them to your grandmother. She is ill and weak. They will do her good. Set out before it gets hot, and when you are going, walk nicely and quietly, and do not run off the path, or you may fall and break the bottle, and then your grandmother will get nothing. And when you go into her room, don't forget to say good morning, and don't peep into every corner before you do it." "I will take great care," said Little Red Riding Hood to her mother, and gave her hand on it. The grandmother lived out in the wood, half a league from the village, and just as Little Red Riding Hood entered the wood, a wolf met her. Little Red Riding Hood did not know what a wicked creature he was not afraid of him at all. "Good day, Little Red Riding Hood," said he. "Thank you kindly, wolf." "Whither away so early, Little Red Riding Hood?" "To my grandmother's." "What have you got in your apron?" "Cake and wine. Yesterday was baking day, so poor sick grandmother is to have something good to make her stronger." "Where does your grandmother live, Little Red Riding Hood?" "A good quarter of a league farther out in the wood. Her house stands under three large oak trees, the nut trees just below." "You surely must know it," replied Little Red Riding Hood. The wolf thought to himself, "What a tender young creature. What a nice plump mouthful. She will be better to eat than the old woman. I must act craftily so as to catch both." So he walked for a short time by the side of Little Red Riding Hood, and then he said, "See, Little Red Riding Hood, how pretty the flowers are about here. Why do you not look around? I believe, too, that you will not hear how sweetly the little birds are singing. You walk gravely along as if you were going to school, while everything else out here in the wood is merry." Little Red Riding Hood raised her eyes, and when she saw the sunbeams dancing here and there through the trees, and the pretty flowers growing everywhere, she thought, "Suppose I take Grandmother a fresh nosegay? That would please her, too. It is so early in the day that I shall get there in good time." And so she ran from the path into the wood to look for flowers. And wherever she had picked one, she fancied that she saw a still prettier one further on, ran after it, and so got deeper and deeper into the wood. Meanwhile, the wolf ran straight to Grandmother's house and knocked at the door. "Who is there?" "Little Red Riding Hood," replied the wolf. "She is bringing cake and wine. Open the door." "Lift the latch," called out the grandmother. "I am too weak and cannot get up." The wolf lifted the latch, the door sprang open, and without saying a word, he went straight to the grandmother's bed and devoured her. Then he put on her clothes, dressed himself in her cap, laid himself in bed, and drew the curtains. Little Red Riding Hood, however, had been running about picking flowers. When she had gathered so many she could carry no more, she remembered her grandmother and set out on the way to meet her. She was surprised to find the cottage door standing open, and when she went into the room, she had such a strange feeling that she said to herself, "Oh dear, how uneasy I feel today, and at other times I like being with grandmother so much." She called out, "Good morning," but received no answer. So she went to the bed and drew back the curtains. There lay her grandmother with her cap pulled far over her face and looking very strange. "Oh, grandmother," she said, "what big ears you have." "The better to hear you with, my child," was the reply. "But, grandmother, what big eyes you have," she said. "The better to see you with, my dear." "But, grandmother, what large hands you have." "The better to hug you with." "Oh, but grandmother, what a terrible big mouth you have. The better to eat you with." And scarcely had the wolf said this, that with one bound he was out of the bed and swallowed up Little Red Riding Hood. When the wolf had appeased his appetite, he lay down again in bed, fell asleep, and began to snore very loudly. The huntsman was just passing the house and thought to himself, "How the old woman is snoring. I must see if she wants anything." So he went into the room, and when he came to the bed, he saw the wolf lying in it. "Do I find you here, you old sinner?" said he. "I have long sought you." Then, just as he was going to fire at him, it occurred to him that the wolf may have devoured the grandmother, and that she still might be saved. He did not fire, but took a pair of scissors, and began to cut open the stomach of the sleeping wolf. When he had two snips, he saw Little Red Riding Hood shining, and then he made two snips more. And the little girl sprang out, crying, "Ha, how frightened I have been, how dark it was inside the wolf." And after that, the aged grandmother came out alive also, but scarcely able to breathe. Little Red Riding Hood, however, quickly fetched the great stones with which they had filled the grandmother's belly, and when he awoke, he wanted to run away, but the stones were so heavy that he collapsed at once and fell dead. All three were delighted. The huntsman drew off the wolf's skin and went home with it. The grandmother ate the cake, drank the wine which Little Red Riding Hood brought, and revived. But Little Red Riding Hood thought to herself, "As long as I live, I will never leave myself the path to run into the woods when my mother has forbidden me to do so." It is also related that once, when Little Red Riding Hood was again taking cakes to her old grandmother, another wolf spoke to her and tried to entice her from the path. Little Red Riding Hood, however, was on her guard and went straight forward on her way and told her grandmother that she had met the wolf and that he had said good morning to her, but with such a wicked look in his eyes that if they had not been on the public road, she is certain he would have eaten her up. "Well," said the grandmother, "we will shut the door that he may not come in." Soon afterwards, the wolf knocked and cried, "Open the door, grandmother. I am Little Red Riding Hood, and I'm bringing you some cakes." But they did not speak or open the door, so the graybeard stole twice or thrice around the house, and at last jumped on the roof, intending to wait till Little Red Riding Hood went home in the evening, and then to steal after her and devour her in the darkness. But the grandmother saw what was in his thoughts. In front of the house was a great stone trough, so she said to the child, "Take the pail, Little Red Riding Hood. I made some sausages yesterday, so carry the water in, which I boiled into the trough." Little Red Riding Hood carried until the great trough was quite full. The smell of sausages reached the wolf, and he sniffed and peeped out, and at last stretched out his neck so far that he could no longer keep his footing and began to slip, and slipped down from the roof straight into the great trough and was drowned. But Little Red Riding Hood went joyously home, and no one did anything to harm her ever again.